Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Since 1987, when the FCC dropped the Fairness Doctrine, the federal policy that mandated balanced viewpoints on the airwaves, there has been an explosion of conservative talk radio. Millions and millions of listeners gathered round the mighty megaphone of the right. Now more than 90% conservative, says a new report. That's hardly a secret, just spin the dial. Here's Rush Limbaugh yesterday, having fun with global warming.
Well, the liberal solution is raise taxes, have huge government, and restrict your freedom. Make you drive cars you don't want to drive. But none of the solutions actually involve cooling the planet, do they?
And here's conservative host Neil Bortz on immigration.
Build a double fence along the Mexican border and stop the damn invasion. I don't care if Mexicans pile up against that fence like tumbleweeds in the Santa Ana winds in Southern California. Let them.
On war and spending and global warming, their agenda is not doing so well. But on immigration, they've got a big win and their voice is undiminished. This hour, On Point, talk radio's conservative clout and debate over the new buzz in Congress to do something about it. First, joining me from Washington is Mark Lloyd, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, a think tank headed by John Podesta, President Clinton's former chief of staff. He's co-author of a new study getting a lot of buzz, pro and con. It's called The Structural Imbalance of Political Talk Radio. Mark Lloyd, thanks very much for being here.
Tom, it's great to be with you.
So there's a lot of conservative voices on the radio. We all know that. A lot pumped out and a lot of listeners. Is it a problem?
Well, it is a problem. The fact is that whether it's national or whether it's local, folks are not getting the range of views that they're interested in when they turn the dial. And so what we are really interested in doing is trying to find a way to correct the problem.
You know, the defenders say this is what people want. This is where the ears go. This is where the dials get turned.
Well, that really is the conservative challenge. I mean, they're suggesting that folks like Rush Limbaugh and Mike Savage are really more entertaining than Al Franken and some of the other liberal talk show hosts. And again, in markets where it's competitive in New York and Chicago and others, the progressive talkers, liberal talkers are really quite competitive. And so the problem is you go to small markets around the country and you turn the dial and you don't hear any progressive or liberal talkers. All you hear is wall-to-wall conservative talk.
Give us the numbers. What have you found? I mean, it is no secret at all. It's the elephant standing in the room, but what are the dimensions?
Well, in the spring of 2007, we looked at 257 news talk stations owned by the top five commercial owners. 91% of the total weekday talk, Monday through Friday, was conservative. Only 9% progressive. That's each weekday over 2,500 hours of conservative talk as compared to about 250 hours of progressive talk. 10 times as much conservative as progressive.
There are many more radio stations in this country than 257. Why did you choose that number? Maybe it would look different if you looked at the whole universe.
Well, again, what we really looked at, we looked at two analyses. One was we looked at the top five commercial station owners, and then we looked at the top 10 markets. In the top 10 markets, what you find is 76% programming is conservative and only 24% is progressive. And so the challenge is, as you suggested, there are thousands of radio stations in this country. How do you get a handle and do a quantitative, a real hard data crunch of what's going on? And so we try to break it down and do as fair a job as we could. And again, we looked at the top five commercial owners Monday through Friday, and then we looked at the top 10 markets. And however you look at it, it always comes out conservatives on top by far.
Okay, presumably these big companies, and you track a lot of them here, CBS and Clear Channel and Citadel and Cumulus and Salem, they want to make a lot of money. Presumably if they could make a lot of money putting liberal voices on the air, they would do it. Am I wrong?
Well, Clear Channel and CBS do put liberal voices on the air, not in quite the same numbers as they do conservatives, but they do
not in quite. I mean, 86% conservative Clear Channel, 74 CBS, and the other Citadel, Cumulus, Salem, 100% conservative. But isn't the question if they could make that bundle that they want with liberal voices, wouldn't they do it? So isn't this the market talking?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, one of the challenges is liberal talkers, progressive talkers, tend to take on corporations. They tend to take on big business. Rush Limbaugh, Mike Savage, these guys, they don't take on big businesses. They take on immigrants piling up, as the guy said, at the borders. I mean, they tend not to take on the folks that do advertising. And so they provide a much more comfortable environment for big business, for the advertisers, than progressive talkers
do. So you're saying it's politically motivated, but they still have to deliver the buck. I mean, isn't that the bottom line? You're saying they're putting up a political shield against an attack on capitalism? Isn't the shareholder or the owner's interest, the dollar, what they're really interested in?
Well, again, it's a complex, it's not all that complex, but it's a multivariate analysis. And so you've got to bring in the audience. That's clear. You've also got to bring in the advertising, and advertisers aren't always comfortable in an environment where you've got progressive talkers challenging them.
How did you decide what to include here? For example, I don't see any NPR referenced in your survey. Maybe I'm wrong. Is public radio part of it?
No, it's a good question. We really looked at commercial owners. Commercial owners are regulated very differently than public broadcasters are regulated. And so we wanted to find out what it was that these commercial owners were doing. And so that's really the cut that we took.
But public radio's on the air. I mean, it's huge on the air. What, 20-plus million listeners every week? That's a big factor if you're making judgments about the balance of political talk on the airwaves. Is it fair to leave it out?
I think there's actually a very good argument for leaving it in. I mean, that was not the analysis that we did. I mean, again, we were very interested, again, and what it was that was going on in these commercial talk radio stations. The other challenge is that much of what you hear and see on public radio is really subject to what happens in the local communities that support public radio. I mean, they are it's a different sort of way to manage themselves. Public radio stations, as you know, are not as subject to the bottom line as the commercial radio stations. They're not necessarily driven by the corporate interest as the commercial radio stations are. And so this is part of what the challenge is.
Trent Lott, Mississippi senator, said in the Senate last week, as conservative talk radio just drove a wall of opposition to this immigration reform package, he said, talk radio is running America. We have to deal with that problem. they came down on him like a ton of bricks. Dick Durbin, Democrat, of course, Majority Whip, said it's time to reinstitute the fairness doctrine. Remind us of what that was, why it went away, and do you think it's a serious move to bring it back?
Oh, happy to do that, but I want to point out that our report does not call for returning the fairness doctrine. And we're saying that the problem really is ownership, the lack of public trustee obligations, the local broadcasters, and things like that. But let me address the fairness doctrine real quickly. The fairness doctrine is really sort of very broad language, saying that all stations that are licensed, given free license from the federal government to serve local communities, have an obligation to present issues of controversy in those local communities in a way that's fair and balanced.
Goes back to the 1940s, dropped in 1987?
It goes back even further than that if you study the law. I mean, it goes back to 1920s. I mean, this was one of the core principles of the Federal Radio Commission in 1927. So this is a very, very old set of principles, and many parts of the fairness doctrine are still on the books. The challenge is, as the Supreme Court said in upholding the fairness doctrine, and this law has never been overturned.
Just not used.
The FCC decided they were no longer going to enforce it. And it wasn't repealed. The FCC simply decided not to enforce it. Now, what the Supreme Court said was that there are two First Amendment rights at issue here. One is the right of the broadcasters to put on whatever talk they want to put on. The other is the right of the listeners to have access to diverse points of view to inform them about what's going on in local communities. And the Supreme Court said when we balance those First Amendment rights, the rights of the broadcasters as against the rights of the listeners and viewers is paramount.
Of course,
and that's
thrown out in 1987, set radio free, and radio went right in a hurry. Mark Lloyd, stand by. I want to invite into our conversation Horace Cooper. He's a senior fellow at the American Civil Responsibilities Union, formerly counsel to Richard Army, House Majority Leader, 94 to 2002. Horace Cooper, thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be here today. Actually, it's the American Civil Rights Union.
Oh, I'm sorry for that. The American Civil Rights Union, very good. Do we have a problem with the balance of politics on American talk radio, Mr. Cooper?
No, we don't. Frankly, I'm actually quite troubled by the moderate and sort of sensible-sounding way that the Center for American Progress is going about what is essentially an attempt to censor points of view and ideological thoughts that they happen not to agree with. It is a really constitutionally suspect concern that the government would be in the business of making assessments as to whether or not there's been too much discussion about the Second Amendment or too little, too much discussion about tax relief or too little, or immigration or any topic.
Fairness doctrine never overturned by the Supreme Court, so it's still on the books. Doesn't that make it, even though not enforced, the law of the land?
Well, there have been a number of instances where the Supreme Court got major matters wrong and took opportunities when they were given a chance to address it. You can look at Plessy Ferguson in 1896 and see Brown v. Board in 1954. 50 years go by and people get a chance to understand.
Mm-hmm. Lots of talk radio just roared into the immigration debate, of course. I mean, it was front and center. Here's Rush Limbaugh, long attacked Democrats on immigration. In recent months, attacking Republicans as well over the immigration problem. Here he is on yesterday's show.
There's a distinct American culture, and there's a political party here that seems hell-bent on doing everything they can to tear it down, using illegal immigration as one of their many tools. The Republican Party, rather than having the vision of Reagan, and rather than having the desires that Reagan had and the optimism, wants to pander.
Here's Sean Hannity with 12 million listeners attacking Trent Lott at the end of last month, in the days leading up to the Senate's last vote on immigration.
I have never seen such anger, frustration, and a feeling that Washington is out of touch with the mainstream in America here. Every poll out there, Senator, the people are saying control the border, and that most people want that first.
Horace Cooper, how do you explain it? Why do you think we've got 90% plus conservative talk radio by Mark Lloyd outfits calculation?
Well, truly, I think it's a temporal phenomenon. Today, it is true that there is a substantially greater amount of conservative programming than there is liberal or progressive programming. But that is a temporal phenomenon. In 25 years or 50 years, I wouldn't be surprised to see a shift in that. What we want to make sure that we're careful about is not having the federal government actually assess the particular ideological, philosophical, or partisan points of views that are being presented and use that as the basis for deciding who gets to keep a license and who does not. That is a very, very troubling concern.
Mark Lloyd,
that's not at all what we're calling for. And so
but it is on the table. I mean, we had Dianne Feinstein saying, it's time to take a look at the legal and constitutional aspects of reviving the fairness doctrine. It's out there.
So it's sort of like, Fox News, a part of this echo chamber on the Republican right, says to Dianne Feinstein, are you for the fairness doctrine?
Yeah.
And she responds, and all of a sudden, Dianne Feinstein is calling for a return to the fairness doctrine.
But wait a minute. I mean, Durbin did say it's time to reinstate. He said, I have this old-fashioned attitude that when Americans hear both sides of the story, they're in a better position to make a decision. I don't know if that's outrageous on the face of it, but he said it. He there he is.
Well, as you said in your opening remarks, our report identifies is that the reason you've got so much conservative talk is that you've got a consolidation of ownership, mm-hmm. pushing talk into local communities, driving local talk shows out, driving women and minorities out, not allowing for a variety of viewpoints being expressed on the air. We're not calling for an end, or we don't want to shut these guys down. We're saying, let's have some opportunities for a variety of other groups to get on the air. Let's change the ownership structure in this country to allow a wide variety of people to get on the air to express their views. Mm. We believe that if you have more diversity on the air, you'll have more diversity of expression on the air. So that's
tough.
That's all we're calling.
Horace Cooper, what about it? You say it's just a matter of time. The pendulum will swing. But Mark Lloyd's group says, no, there's a structural imbalance. That's the word. You know, that means ownership. And it's not going to change because it's owned this way.
The Center for American Progress and Mark Lloyd can continue to pretend that they don't plan on having a governmental solution to change or transform the actual programming. But the fact of the matter is that absent some plan that would double or triple the number of radio stations that are already in existence, they're going to have to take the existing set of network programming and change it, either by changing the ownership or changing the on-air talent. That is, in fact, saying, you once had this type of programming, we've now made an assessment, we don't approve of it, and we're modifying it. That is censorship, and that is constitutionally troubling to do so.
Mark Lloyd, is there a way to change the structure without, shutting down half of the conservative voices out there? I mean, how many hours can people listen? Can you double up the amount of public radio, liberal talk radio, if that's what you wanted to do to strike a balance?
Well, again, we are calling for more speech. We're calling for more diverse speech. What the conservatives are very good at doing is creating a framework to shift the conversation. What we are saying is that the notion that Clear Channel can own 1,200 radio stations in the country has an impact on what it is that people have access to. We want to change that. We're not talking about the fairness doctrine. We're not saying, you know, we're going to monitor or we want the government to monitor all the radio stations in the country. But they make this stuff up and then, you know, suggest that we ought to be debating what they've made up about what we're saying. What we are saying is pretty clear.
Horace?
If I could jump in here, Tom. This is Paul Waldman from Media Matters from America.
Paul Waldman, good to have you with us. Senior fellow at Media Matters joining us from Washington. Didn't know you were there, Paul. Thanks for coming in. What do you say?
This is actually something that we hear a lot from conservatives. One of the core elements of the rhetoric of conservative talk radio is that they're the underdogs, that they're being oppressed by these large liberal forces that are out there trying to silence them. And so you hear Rush Limbaugh saying that they're trying to censor me and take me off the air and stop me from saying the things that I want to say. It's always been a key part of how conservative talk radio has constructed its rhetoric that they're underdogs. Now, this has been extremely difficult for them to carry off, especially for the last 6 years when they've had both houses of Congress and the White House.
But that's not exactly what Horace Cooper is saying today. He's acknowledging that they are predominant, but he's saying to change that by government fiat is a kind of censorship.
But this is why they're much more interested in this issue actually than the Democrats and the progressives are. The issue of the fairness doctrine in particular, you know, you have Senator Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma going around saying that he overheard a secret conversation between Hillary Clinton and Barbara Boxer where they're planning to take down conservative talk radio. They're much more interested in talking about the idea that the fairness doctrine in some kind of pernicious form is going to be reinstituted and will be pulling people like Limbaugh and Michael Savage off the air. I haven't heard any Democrats talking about it that way. It's the Republicans, the conservatives, who are so interested in that because that just feeds into the idea that they want to get across to people, which is that they're the underdogs, they're the oppressed ones.
Well, but they've got a lot to lose here. Hang on one second, Mr. Cooper, Lloyd, Waldman. We've got a lot of listeners who want to come in here. Let me bring them. I'll come right back to you. William's calling from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. William, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show and I think extremely important topic. First of all, I've been an avid listener of National Public Radio and Rush Limbaugh, go figure,
okay.
For probably 15 or 20 years. My philosophy is very simple. I want to hear the maximum amount of divergent views on issues so I can inform myself and then make, hopefully, reasonably intelligent decisions when I'm voting or when I'm coming down on issues.
Mark Lloyd says it's 9-1 conservative, then. Are you feeling cheated in your search for divergent views or not?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. I mean, we've got more sources of information. I'm 61. We've got more sources of information today as American people than we've ever had in the history of our country, and I love it. And I'm very wary, and I tend to be a bit conservative, but I'm very wary of when the Trent Lotts of the world, all of a sudden, because talk radio didn't go exactly the way they wanted it to go, to suddenly come down on it. And I think we as American people need to be very concerned about why the suddenness of this issue It's wonderful. Your show's wonderful. I listen to it almost every day. And remember, we can always change the dial, and we can go to CNN, we can go to MSNBC, we can go to National Public Radio, and God bless America. That's what makes us great.
William, we've got it. Thanks very much. Paul Waldman, how about it? We can always change the dial, says William in South Carolina.
Well, part of the problem is that in a lot of places, you can't find progressive radio. It's only conservative radio that's on the dial. And, you know, conservatives like to talk about how NPR is the counter, but nobody who is really honest takes that seriously. And it's not just true on radio. You know, on cable television right now, there are 13 programs that are hosted by a conservative host. There are no programs that are hosted by a progressive host. So you have this across a lot of different media where, on the one hand, you have organizations like NPR that try as hard as they can to be down the middle and objective, and then you have extreme conservatives like Rush Limbaugh or like Bill O'Reilly, and there is no progressive counterweight.
But isn't it the American way to kind of battle that out in the market? Air America went up, went bankrupt. It's limped back up, but, you know, it didn't cut it there, Paul. Isn't that kind of what our country does, is duke it out?
Well, their ratings have actually been pretty good. They've had a lot of kind of internal management issues, but where they've been gotten into markets, they've done pretty well in the ratings. And you find that with a lot of there are progressive radio hosts who do very well in the ratings but can't get into as many markets. You know, you have Rush Limbaugh in 600 different markets. You have Sean Hannity in probably 300 or 400. But someone like, say, Ed Schultz, who's the most widely syndicated progressive radio talk show host, he can't get into markets, even though wherever he is, he does terrific in the ratings and in a lot of cases beats people like Limbaugh and Hannity. But he's not getting programmed by those a lot of those smaller markets. I mean, anyone who has driven across the country knows that every town has its collection of kind of low-rent Limbaughs. And the programmers obviously feel that all they have to do is put up somebody who's willing to go on the air and say terrible things about Bill Clinton, and that's the way.
Well, but more than that, a lot of those little towns actually have Rush Limbaugh instead of some local production that they might have had years ago. I saw that happen in my own town. Horace Cooper, let me come to you with this question. I mean, I am looking at these numbers, and the imbalance is very, very striking. Yet, you know, Americans are not that imbalanced when you look at their political views. It's been a pretty much 50-50 nation, goes this way and that. If Americans line up kind of 50-50 on politics, is something wrong when radio, talk radio, lines up so heavily on the right?
This very discussion that we're having is a very, very helpful moment. I would call it in my classroom a teaching moment. If we were talking about a study that purported to show that there were a large number of either newspapers or other communications programming that were opposed to the war in Iraq, and as a result, a structural imbalance in the information that's being presented to the American people existed, and we would want to recommend some solutions to change that, we should instinctively recognize that that is not the role of the government. The role of the government, as constrained by the First Amendment, is to allow all of the opinions to go forward.
Mr. Cooper, leave government out of it for just a minute. What about the market? Is it working right when you've got a 50-50 nation, more in the polling almost, but you've got a 90-10 or 91-9 ratio on commercial talk radio to the right? Is there a problem with that or not?
I don't know how many of your listeners are aware of this, but both XM and Sirius Radio carry both a left and a right programming format. They're 24/7, and you're available in all 50 states, and you can look at their actual listeners. So if you're in one of these communities where you say that there is not the offering that you want, there is the ability to go on the satellite
radio. If you want to pay for
it,
if you want to buy it. That's not the public airwaves. Okay.
There's free internet access to the programming of your choice. I typically don't listen to Rush Limbaugh on AM radio. I typically will sit on my computer and tune into a station, and I can listen to it for free. The fact of the matter is, every time the ratings are done, when people are just given the choice of either satellite radio or just their internet radio choices, they overwhelmingly are choosing a right-of-center programming. That has nothing to do with any corporatist slant or any structural imbalance.
I'll put that to Mark Lloyd in a second. Yep.
That is a temporal phenomenon related to the temporary exciting programming that is available.
We've got the argument. Let me go to Burlington, Iowa. And Eric. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
What the gentleman just said is completely wrong, because if you look in San Diego, Ed Schultz, who's a progressive, beats Hannity in San Diego, California.
Navy Town.
So basically, that is one of the most conservative places in the nation. Now, the market dictates that they go for a progressive over a conservative. I'd love to know how he explains that. See, this is about ownership and access. A newspaper, you can buy it or not buy it, but the public owns the airwaves, and we give licenses to these people. If we give licenses to a monopoly, they control the message. Now, I'm sure if a bunch of, let's say, Muslims owned all of the Infinity and all Jones Network and all of these, I'm sure that if they were controlling the message, the gentleman, and I would as well, have a lot to say about that. But we need equal, or at least, I'm not saying a fairness doctrine, but let the market have equal opportunity, such as in San Diego, and let's see what the voter, so to speak, with their ratings, really determined.
Yeah, okay, Eric, we got it. Thank you very much, Mark Lloyd. How about it? You hear what Eric has to say, but Horace Cooper says, look at what people do when they have the choice. When they go on satellite radio or on the Internet, they still tilt right in their listening habits.
I think Eric is absolutely right. But let me bring another aspect into this. Local communities are not getting local discussion of local issues. They're getting Sean Hannity and Michael Savage.
Yeah, I have seen that in my own hometown. It just got blown away, the local stuff, and now it's all fed from on high. That is true.
Exactly. So while we as a progressive think tank really are very concerned about the national discussion of progressive issues, we're also concerned about the fact that local communities, whether they are left or right or blue or green or purple or however you want to color them, they are not getting the discussion about local issues that they need because of the corporate ownership patterns that have been established by government. And so part of what we're saying is that we need to make sure that all Americans have an opportunity to get a diverse set of opinions on the public airwaves.
What do you mean corporate ownership patterns have been established by government? Anybody can come in and buy if they've got the money.
Well, again, if there was a time when radio station ownership was limited at the local level much more severely than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
There are no national caps for radio ownership. That's recently been put in place in the 1996 Telecommunications Act.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just saying the rules that limited ownership opportunities, because as much as we might like Air America or Ed Schultz or some of these other guys.
Or not like, depending who's listening, yeah.
Exactly. The problem is with the owners. Air America is a subscriber service. They don't own radio stations. And so the domination of owners to determine like Cumulus or Citadel or Salem that you're going to get – If we own the radio stations, you're going to get 100% conservative talk, even if an Ed Schultz might make us more money. We want to change that. We want to make sure that other owners have an opportunity to get on the airwaves.
We're talking this hour about talk radio's conservative clout and the buzz in a Democratic Congress to do something about it. Why hasn't liberal talk done better? Why did Air America go bankrupt? Is there a structural problem here or something else? Do we have a problem that needs fixing on the airwaves, or are they the heartbeat of America? Let's listen to that heartbeat. Here's Michael Savage on Barack Obama.
The phony, invented candidate Barack Obama, the man whose campaign will come to nothing, as I told you, he's a creation, he's an invention, he's a nobody, and he belongs to the most left-wing of all Christian churches. Of course, he had a background, as you well know, in a Muslim madrasas in Indonesia, which has been swept aside by Moloch and the others in the media who don't want you to know about his full background. Hussein Obama is his name.
Okay, Hussein Obama. There's 8 million listeners a week for Michael Savage. There he goes after Obama. Here he goes after Hillary Clinton and her pro-life speech after a speech she gave at Rutgers.
Killing embryos up to the 9th month and call it women's health. That's rubbish. That's Hitler dialogue. Goebbels would be proud of you, Hillary Clinton. I know Mao Zedong would have been proud of you. But this is life and death you are talking about. It's not about women's health. It's about killing babies in the womb up to the 9th month.
Hitler, Goebbels, Mao Zedong, where's the left wing? Where's the progressive balance to that? Well, it's not up on the commercial charts right now. Mark Lloyd is with us from the Center for American Progress. Horace Cooper at the American Civil Rights Union. Paul Waldman from Media Matters for America. Right now, Tom's calling from Arcadia, Iowa. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to weigh in on the fairness doctrine and what I believe it's a way, because the right in this country only has talk radio. Everything else, television, newspapers, is overwhelmingly dominated by the left.
Well, they have the White House and Congress for 10 years or more.
I'm just talking about the media and the information we get, and I think the people are tired of getting things slanted by the left, so they go to talk radio and they hear opinions they agree with, like they don't want gay marriage, they don't want late-term abortion, they do want border security, they don't want government benefits paid to people who broke the law to get here, and this is the only place they can hear people talk about that. And in the fairness doctrine, I think what they're going to do is say, okay, you have to put on an unpopular opinion to balance that out. Well, what radio station is going to do that? They're going to say, why make money here and lose money there? I'll just play music.
Tom, let us pick it up. Paul Waldman, what do you say first to the slant charge? And then, you know, if we bring back the fairness doctrine, we just won't have this gusher of opinion. They'll go back to top 40.
Well, this is part of the ideology that the right wing has been pushing for a few decades now, that anything that does not support a right wing view of the world must be biased. So the truth has to have a liberal bias if the truth doesn't reflect well on the Republicans, or in this case, on the Bush administration. And so CNN must have a liberal bias, and newspapers must have a liberal bias, and anything that is short of Rush Limbaugh must be liberal bias. You know, that clip that you played from Michael Savage where he repeated the lie about Barack Obama attending a fundamentalist madrasa as a child, and he compared Hillary Clinton to Hitler. That's some of the milder things that he says. And he's maybe the worst example, but there is just a sea of invective and hatred that spews out over our airwaves every single day. As you mentioned, Michael Savage is in hundreds of radio stations around the country. And there's nothing on the left that even comes within 100 miles of that. But yet, the right wing has managed to convince its supporters that anything that doesn't reflect that particular worldview must have a liberal bias. And therefore, there's some kind of balance between somebody like Michael Savage or Rush Limbaugh and CNN.
So are you saying bring back the fairness doctrine? And if you do, will that just bring down the whole tent of talk radio? Because it's, you know, it's unwieldy to balance everything. You saw what was there before when the fairness doctrine was in effect.
Well, it was a very different world in the media when the fairness doctrine was in effect back before the 1980s. And it wasn't even enforced all that vigorously back then, frankly. There's no question that you have a lot of the companies, as Mark was talking about, companies like Clear Channel and like Salem that have an ideological agenda. And if they come in and buy every radio station in a town, then the people who live in that community are only going to get one view, regardless of what they think and what they want.
So as unlikely as it may be, is your group for a return to the fairness doctrine or not? Media Matters.
I think you could solve a lot of these problems without even having any kind of legislation. Kind of stuff that comes out on right-wing talk radio every day, I think it falls below the radar of a lot of people. You know, Rush Limbaugh has a lot of listeners, but people who don't listen to him don't really know what exactly kind of the stuff that goes on, the sort of hatred and often racism and things like that. And yet, Dick Cheney goes on his program. Some of these hosts are treated by the Republican leadership as though they're legitimate participants in our debate, and that they're people who people should be paying attention to.
So you want fairness doctrine imposed or not?
I don't think that, I haven't yet seen what a fairness doctrine would look like in today's media world. Mm-hmm. We know what it was like 20 or 30 years ago. But if you were going to come up with something today, it would have to be very different. So I don't know what exactly the proposals are for what it would be like today. Obviously, it would have to be something that would be tailored to the current situation, the 21st century, the media environment we have now. But I think that the most important thing is that people should demand that what's in their communities is something that gives them the kind of debate that they want.
And maybe reflects the political makeup. Let's go to our listeners, San Luis Obispo, California. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
And good morning over here. I think it reflects our government. The government's broken, and so is the radio system. It's just... Well, you just don't get any fairness and any truth at all out of anybody.
But what's broken about it? You heard our listener in Iowa said, at last, we got ourselves reflected in right-wing talk radio. We were waiting for that, he says.
Yeah, well, I'm waiting for the other side. Call me an old California hippie or something, but I'm 52. My family was in the first 10 of the first 13 Continental Congresses, colonels and generals with George Washington.
And you're not getting the balance, what, that you want, that you think they had in pre-radio days?
It's always been leaning towards one way, and the money is bought into the radio system just like they bought politicians. And it's two conglomerates, only owned by three or four major companies own all the radios and television stations.
Yeah.
Maybe six people.
And we hear the appetite for something else there. Let's go to Jay in Pembroke, Massachusetts. Jay, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom, for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say I'm from Massachusetts, and I'm an inveterate listener. I love listening to radio. I scan the dials, and I can tell you that in Massachusetts, the market forces are out of balance. You have trouble finding a commercial type of a station, not referring to NPR, but just a regular old radio station, AM or FM,
yeah,
that has any significant progressive views at all. And I don't believe that this is representative of what people in Massachusetts actually want to hear. I think that's not true.
So you're looking for something else and not finding it? Let's go to Brandon in North Liberty, Iowa. Brandon, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to make a suggestion, or what I thought was the source behind the popularity of conservative talk radio is similar to, you know, shows like The Daily Show, where they take a somewhat political issue and make a caricature of it and push it as, you know, sort of reality.
But those are comedies, send-up spoofs. You're saying they're what? That's what right-wing radio is?
Well, it's sort of reality show masquerading as a, you know, real politically driven talk radio show. It's entertaining, no doubt about that, but I just fail to see how, you know, you could give that any sort of credibility.
But it rains and we see it. One more from Bob in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Bob, you're on the air, my friend.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd just like to say that I think public radio is different because they're subsidized by the government. Their whole agenda is liberal, and I don't think we should be giving them that subsidy if no other station gets it. And the national media are all liberal, so I think it's unbalanced that way.
Well, national media, I mean, Rush Limbaugh's national. You think he's liberal?
Oh, absolutely not. I don't listen to him either, but the government's not paying him for his work either.
Yeah, a little bit. Not much of what I earn comes from the government anymore, but a little bit. Horace Cooper, what do you say?
I'm a little bit troubled that there was really no opportunity to respond to the idea that there was no liberal bias in some of the cable and news media.
You've got the mic. Pick it up.
The same day that the Center for American Progress study came out, MSNBC also issued their own report in which they found a study of foundational and charitable and political giving, overwhelmingly an 8-to-1 tilt to the left by people who sit behind the anchors and make decisions about what goes
over
the
airwaves.
Yeah,
but that was a tiny little number of journalists.
I don't believe that means that we should have limits on the ability of people to make contributions, and I also don't believe that it is proof that there will forever be a bias. But there have been study after study after study. The Pew Foundation has done them, quite a few others have, that show that when journalists in the prominent journalists identify themselves and acknowledge that they voted for the candidate from one party overwhelmingly more than the other party. Again,
what's
that's
the relevance
a temporal,
when the airwaves are actually filled with the right-wing talk radio?
Just talk radio.
Yeah.
That's one particular. What I'm saying is that's a temporary phenomenon. The caller who said that, like Comedy Central, they bring ideas in exciting ways and entertain people while talking about their subjects are able to capture an audience. Typically, talk radio's audience includes at least a quarter of self-identified liberals.
Yeah. Mr. Cooper, we've got it. Let me give the last word to Mark Lloyd. They did the spade work here on their report. Mr. Lloyd, do you see a change coming down the pike, or is ownership going to be the final word here?
We've got a major ownership proceeding going on at the FCC. People are looking at this ownership issue. We need to make sure that more Americans have access to commercial airwaves to get diverse points of view out the air.
Mark Lloyd at the Center for American Progress, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Appreciate the show.
Great to have you. Horace Cooper at the American Civil Rights Union. Mr. Cooper, thanks for joining us.
I really enjoyed being on the show today. Thank you.
And Paul Waldman, we'll have you back again at Media Matters for America. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.